Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers, a one-hour analysis of news. It's program number 734, December the 30th, 1985. I tried to think of ways to summarize the news of the past year. Some of the murders, some of the trials, new evidence of old material I've discussed before. There is no way to summarize 1985, and 1986 is going to be worse. America is like a baby in a buggy, drifting quickly towards the edge of a Niagara Falls and ready to splatter over the side. We're in a condition that is, it's just not describable. There's a president, Ronald Reagan, Vice President George Bush, the Attorney General, Edwin Meese, a CIA Director, William Casey, National Security Council run literally now working its way up, is Sven Kramer, who is in the news all the time, although we have a new National Security Advisor, Mr. Poindexter, for a while, FBI Director William Webster, and all of them involved in either covering past assassinations, covering up the court cases, part of political assassination plans, some of them directly, the President, the Vice President, Edwin Meese, knowledgeable, all that, and William Casey of the CIA, and not allowing the courts in any way to work, major witnesses being murdered right and left, and a real lawless society that is going to have a lot of pain and a lot of disruption because matters weren't tended to properly as they appeared, and the prognosis for this country is one that's going to mount on violence and terrorism. In the past years, I've been on the air 15 years, and unfortunately, I've only published 6 articles, although I don't know if I wrote more, if people would read them, and I don't know if what I wrote is understood by most of the people who even do see it. But they were good stories, and they summed up an overview along from a long time ago of material that's surfacing now in the news and that people are being able to admit did happen or did affect events. And I had an overview in the 6 articles that I hope this year maybe to publish into one volume, if not this year, next year, and then update what happened in 1985. If you sit down and read these 6 stories, one, why was Martha Mitchell kidnapped? This goes from Watergate to the Kennedy assassination and back to Nixon's role with the Nazis. It came out in 1972. The Senate Select Committee is part of the cover-up in 73. That's how the Watergate investigation was identical to the Warren Commission. And you can go back. The Warren Commission had the same people and was part of the Nuremberg trials and the cover-up. Then I wrote the SLA is the CIA in 1974. And that is the precursor of the Posse Comitatus, the Nazis in America, Commander Kohl in the Bay Area, the murder of Dr. Foster, Marcus Foster with the cyanide bullets, Reagan as governor, and now he's president, Meese as legal advisor, and now he's attorney general. And that same year, I wrote as Howard Hughes dead and buried off a Greek island. And in 1985, we see the Hughes aircraft is bought up by General Motors, one of the largest supporters of Adolf Hitler, and these 2 large corporations combine. And the Hughes Medical Center is off to be the recipient of millions and millions of dollars with accountability to nobody. And then in 1983, I wrote on the Korean Airlines, which was the important link of people like John Singlaub and the various people in the Middle East, like George Habash, and the terrorism that we're seeing now, the international terrorists, and the links to our own police departments, and again to Reagan and Meese in California, and now they're in Washington, and then the assassination of John Kennedy and the Nazi connections. And now, recently, Covert Action has come out with an article by Peter Dale Scott on Operation Sunrise and the fact that the Waffen-SS and our own OSS were closely together and were melded. And that's what I was trying to say 2 years ago and bringing out the links of Heinrich Himmler, SS Karl Wolf, to our own intelligence apparatus and Reinhard Gehlen and Father Morleon. And in these 6 articles that I put together, very carefully constructed, an overview of events. If read properly, you can sit back and see the fruits of those roots taking place today. Jack Kimbrough is a researcher in Los Angeles who's done extensive work on 2 areas. There are a lot of ways to go this route. One is to specialize in one particular thing, and others branch out and see a cause and effect between these various military operations. They are military operations. Kimbrough has specialized on the Robert Kennedy assassination and on the SLA. And he wrote a brief essay article on the SLA that I'll share with you in a week or two because it is so pertinent to all the terrorism that's in the news now. But he put in this article, the most revolutionary thing you can do in America is to enforce the law. The president violates the constitutions. He declares war. Our police and intelligence agencies conspire to and commit elaborate and heinous crimes in the name of our nation. And he cites the SLA and zebra killings as being an example, going back to 1974. And he said only a few tough and courageous citizens ever questioned these activities. And he cited Mae Brussel and Paul Krasner, who were the Americans who saddled up and rode off in hot pursuit. But where are the other members of opposition to the activities? And he cites an example that is so flagrant. Again, coming up with Reagan's big anger or his verbal attack against terrorism when he's a master at it, Kimbrough cites the Harrises as an example of the United States laws breaking down the federal laws and the California state laws, and it is an example of what went wrong many, many times over and why the problems we see in the news today have compounded. He said wherever the SLA operated, that was a Symbionese Liberation Army that kidnapped Patty Hearst in 1973. Wherever they operated, the contradictions were glaring. But in Sacramento, they were monumental. That's where they killed a woman in front of the bank and were not charged for that. Patty Hearst drove the getaway car and Emily Harris did the shooting and nobody was charged with murder. These are the events that we are seeing today. And Kimbrough says the Harrises conspired to and did kidnap Patty Hearst. The Harrises, they're just talking about two people out of the SLA, Emily and William Harris, and then we could go into the Scotts too, but he's talking about the Harrises. The Harrises conspired to and were complicit in her rape. They kept her in a closet and all four sexual acts with her, locked up in a closet for about 30 days. The Harrises conspired to and did rob three banks. The Harrises murdered Myrna Lee Opsahl in a bank in robbery in Carmichael, California. The Harrises conspired to and did possess machine guns. The Harrises conspired to kidnap Patty's father. The Harrises conspired to and did extort $3 million from Randolph Hearst, which was turned over. The Harrises conspired to plant a bomb in a police car. The Harrises conspired to and did cross state lines in flight to avoid protection. Now, all of these crimes, with the possible exception of kidnapping, rape, conspiracy to bomb, and extortion, are federal offenses. Only Patty, who was victimized and criminalized by the Harrises, was tried in a federal court. Only Patty was given a federal court, not the others, for one of the bank robberies, not for the three. And the Harrises, who planned it all, have been tried and were tried in a state court in California for stealing a pair of socks and shooting up a plate glass window at a sporting goods store. And later they were allowed to plea bargain down to a simple kidnapping and brag that they would do no extra time because the sentence was concurrent with a sporting goods stint. And Jack Kimbrough is asking in 1985, where is the opposition? What is happening? And he compares it to Nazi Germany, where all those people who would speak up have been infiltrated and controlled. Now, regarding the violence in Europe that is taking place in the Middle East, a story from the Monterey Herald this past week, terror attacks called criminal and cowardly. Ronald Reagan refers to them, and Larry Speaks, the spokesman for the State Department and for the White House, they refer to the airport violence as criminal and cowardly. How can they control acts over there when they were in charge, Reagan and Meese here, and were working directly with and around the Harrises and the Scotts and the whole activity of the SLA? The acts of terrorism in Italy and in Vienna are just a continuation of what happened in Malta and in Cyprus and Middle East, and with the Klinghoffer case outside of Egypt, it is a continuation. It will get worse. In terms of violence, we talk about cowardly acts. The Reagan administration just approved a $56 million slated for Papa Doc in Haiti, a known dictator in an impoverished nation, a savage government. That is not terrorism. That is not cowardly. $56 million of our tax dollars goes to Haiti. Also, he just signed yesterday or 2 days ago, December 28th, $100 million of money to go grant aid to Turkey. Another dictatorship, and Robert Keith Gray represents, from his public relations office, the country of Turkey. That's where Paul Hensi of the Aja, Claire Sterling, Michael Ledeen lies of the CIA trying to coax a Bulgarian plot came from. Paul Hensi was the CIA station chief in Turkey. Gray is the PR man in charge of Turkey. This dictatorship is going to get their first installment of $150 million, the grant aid of $100 million to go to a dictatorship in Turkey. Now, George Shultz visited West Berlin, and the story from the Houston Post, Shultz decries Soviet influence in Eastern Europe. First of all, or maybe you remember this, I've mentioned it before, there are rules of war. Believe it or not, there are rules of war. And if Germany goes all the way to Soviet Union and almost gets to Moscow, if they took Russia, they would be in control of Russia. That is one of the rules of war. But if the person who is attacked pushes a invading country back to a certain point at which the war is stopped, they have that country or countries and are in charge of those after the war, aren't allowed to keep those countries. Those are the rules of war. And George Shultz is over there stirring up trouble because of the Soviet influence in Eastern Europe. How can he go to Europe, to Romania or Hungary or Yugoslavia, and tell them what to do after what America has done in El Salvador? What has America done in Guatemala, the United Fruit, and the coup, and the CIA? What have they done in Costa Rica? What was our influence in Costa Rica? How about our anti-Castro Cubans to overthrow Cuba? And are worrying about Cuba, why wouldn't the Soviet Union worry about West Germany at their borders, including Afghanistan, that borders on the Soviet Union? What have we done in Nicaragua, putting Somoza in and the Somoza family? Dictatorships and control of the land, the airports, the machinery, agriculture in the hands of a few, literally owned by the United States, and the military trained by the USA. And he goes over to Europe and doesn't want Soviet influence in Eastern Europe, but we want American influence in Central America, South America. And this administration is just so crazy, the way they go around arguing as if there isn't another side and as if the other side isn't being exposed every single day. Now, Jack Anderson has been carrying a series of articles on Franklin Roosevelt, and there's a big argument about, was Franklin Roosevelt ill in 1944, when he ran for his third term? And one of the purposes of examining the Roosevelt case is because they want to prove, the far right wants to prove, that Roosevelt wasn't in his right mind at the time of the Yalta Agreement, that he was sick and didn't know what he was doing, and therefore the agreements after the war shouldn't hold, that the Soviet Union should be closed in one more time, invaded by Britain and Japan in 1905, by the Germans and the Western Europeans and America. At the time of the Revolution, we sent American troops up to Siberia and up to Vladivostok and the borders of the Soviet Union, trying to overthrow that government after the Revolution. And they went through World War II and being attacked, and then World War III, the Western world attacking them, and the Western world arming Hitler for the purpose of destroying the Soviet Union. Now, the only reason to keep going into the fact that Roosevelt was old and sick was to prove that he didn't know what he was doing. But Jack Anderson brings out the point in that the medical records of FDR are gone, that there's no autopsy that was conducted to confirm or the cause of death as being a cerebral hemorrhage, that the papers at Bethesda Naval Hospital have disappeared, and that the medical details of Franklin Roosevelt after he died are all gone. Now, one reason I believe they're all gone was explained in many articles and books on the fact that Franklin Roosevelt was murdered, that he was in correspondence with Stalin. Stalin knew about the agreements being made with Alan Dulles and William Donovan, with the SS, with the Waffen-SS, and secret agreements made with Nazi Germany and Galen. And Stalin had wired to Roosevelt, "What is going on? Are you making a separate peace treaty?" And Roosevelt said, "Absolutely no." And about a day later, he was dead. Now, Roosevelt's body was supposed to have been a purple, discolored, as if it was bombed. And an interesting thing was that his dog, Fala, was never seen, that he was supposed to have died with Roosevelt when Roosevelt was killed. That little Scotty was never seen. From the time Roosevelt died, Fala died, and this could be checked up. What happened to Fala, little puppy, when Roosevelt died? And the reason the autopsy papers aren't around, and no autopsy was done, and the Bethesda papers disappeared, and the health records disappeared, was the possibility that he was blown away. And interestingly enough, the day that he died, he was having his portrait done by Mrs. Shumatov. I mentioned this years ago on the air, I believe. And she worked with Alan Dulles. She was a white Russian emigre who had worked with Alan Dulles and Raymond Donovan of the OSS, who was with him the day that he died. Now, just running down some more horrendous news to summarize what's in the papers. We can't cover it all in this hour, the kind of week the news is coming out. Story, Mises' brother out as director of Department of Motor Vehicles. He has a brother who was head of the Department of Motor Vehicles, and Governor Dumaitian removed him and put another person in his place. He was appointed head of the DMV in 1983, and now he's been moved to the Unemployment Insurance Appeals Board. It is horrendous to have the brother of the Attorney General, this Attorney General, as head of the DMV, because the Census Bureau and the DMV work very closely to find and locate every single person in America. And between the post office, when people move and mail comes to them at a general delivery, or the Department of Motor Vehicles, when you change your address, or the Social Security, those three, they can find any person in the United States within an hour or 2 hours and locate their residence. And the Census isn't supposed to use the Census Bureau, the DMV, but they do. And it is a great organization for locating every person with a driver's license or with an identity card. If you don't have a car, you can go there for an identity card. And Mises' brother was head of the DMV and has been removed. Now, the newspapers, in terms of the violence in Europe, have run stories, PLO faction stages attack, American officials indicate. And then begins the confusion, where the stories of the Middle East violence, just as the one in Malta that I cited, or the TWA, or the Egyptian, the Klinghoffer, could all be provocateur type of actions. And in the articles, they referred to Abu Naidel, the terrorist, as being behind these. And then they want to blame Mr. Gaddafi in Libya. And then another story this morning says Naidel and Gaddafi are bitter enemies. They don't get along. And the United States is begging Israel, don't retaliate yet. They use words like indiscriminate killing, our officials, but they can't ascertain the blame. They're suspicious of Naidel. It's a new faction, a breakaway faction of the PLO. It's a pattern of Naidel. They believe Naidel is working with Libya. All guesses, and with all our CIA, defense intelligence agencies, and all the fundings into what is going on in other countries, the motive is missing. The relationships are missing. They're trying to work Mr. Naidel into being a new Carlos. Carlos faded away after his links to the CIA became so overt to Edwin Wilson and Frank Turple and that gang and Samuel Cummings in London. Once those links were identified, Carlos disappeared. Naidel has also been identified as working with the Israeli intelligence. A lot of provocateurs can set up a lot of situations that cause confusion and death, but keep the powers that be on your toes, such as the Bologna bombing, the bombings in Europe and France, that purposely, again, try to blame the left, but are created and put together by our own intelligence agencies for the purpose of confusion and to blame, to create an organization or a group of people as being responsible and irresponsible, while the authorities, our authorities and our news media, come out as the people who don't advance terrorism, who don't condone violence, who come out looking so clean while the crazies are out there killing. Now, an example of violence is a story in the Washington Post this past week regarding the investigations in the various states on asylum for the El Salvadorian refugees who've come here. The article says, State Department said to withhold reports of Salvadorian violence. Federal judge demands data on death squad activities. He claims that in trying to find out about the sanctuary movement in Los Angeles or in Texas, that the federal government has lied about the amount of people murdered, and the judge in Los Angeles, federal judge, criticized the government for not disclosing the reports on political violence in El Salvador. He asked for such documents as report on death squads in El Salvador, torture update. U.S. District Court Judge David Kenyon said it appears people don't want to give the court information on the death squads in El Salvador, and to be brutally frank, the State Department and the government are playing hardball here. And Mr. Kenyon, the judge, said that the reports would have to be subpoenaed, and by the time the subpoena would be issued, George Shultz would have declared the report secret, and he will invoke executive privilege to prevent their release. That's how America handles terrorism when we want to send people back into the arms of terrorism. The judge responded that he would demand to see the documents in private. When the Secretary of State finds them secret, I'm going to have the reports in chambers here. The court is going to go all the way. They want documentations of death squads, torture, military bombings of civilians. The government is withholding those documents to protect their own foreign policy, as we just sent 20 or 26 million to El Salvador last month. It was earmarked for El Salvador. Now, there's been a request for these papers to see just who are we sending these people back to, and there is a judge in Los Angeles asking about it. This past week, there was the disappearance, and I assume the murder, of a reporter down in Argentina. The story reads as this. It's from the San Francisco Chronicle. Argentine cops probe the kidnap of a reporter. Buenos Aires. An Italian journalist is believed to have been kidnapped when he was escorted from his home Sunday by a man who identified himself as a police officer. This is December 27th. A police communique said that Jose Palozzi, P-A-L-O-Z-Z-I, had not been summoned by the police and that the authorities are treating it as a kidnapping. Palozzi is known for his articles he wrote in 1982 on the activities of the illegal P2, the Masonic Lodge, and their relationship to the Argentine government and the top-ranking Argentine military officers. One of those officers is Mr. Maselli, and he's just been given a life sentence for murders and activities in Argentina, and I'll do more about him and his brother in San Francisco probably next week. Palozzi filed charges December the 3rd against officials of the former military government for collecting commissions on their arms deals with Italy, and he told the prosecutors that he had evidence to prove his claims. He has lived in Argentina for several years, was last seen Sunday, this is December 27th, 11:30 a.m., when a man came to the door and said he was a policeman and wanted to question him at the headquarters. In his 1982 article, Palozzi charged that the top-ranking Argentine military officers directed their local operations of the Italian-based propaganda to a lodge in Argentina after Licio Gelli was forced to flee Italy. He was taken back to a Swiss prison and left there, and he was forced to leave there, and he went to Argentina. And he was in Argentina after the war until the 1950s because, as a member of the Waffen-SS, he had left Italy and then went to Argentina and was brought back to Italy to form the Masonic Lodge and the P2. So this Italian journalist investigator is for all purposes dead. Now, this very controversial shooting in New York City of the primary suspect in one of the major drug trials going on, Paul Castellano, has been covered up as of this date. This is December the 30th. A story in the San Jose Mercury last week. Police identified two who killed New York mobsters. The New York detectives tentatively identified two of the three gunmen who executed crime czar Paul Castellano and his chief of staff On a busy street, a police source says, the police have impounded at least three black late-model Lincolns that fit the description of the car in which the killers fled. Now, on television, they described three black men who shot the mobsters. Let's find out if they are like the black men who shot Dr. Marcus Foster in Oakland, the SLA killing, who are white people with black faces. I don't know the secret. It's been 1 week since the men were caught, or allegedly caught, who shot Paul Castellano and his driver, and they haven't been identified in the newspapers as of this date. I also incidentally called Florida and the Florida newspapers to see if I could get any more information on Gaetan Fonzi, and they have no record of his murder or death in Florida. The witness primary investigator for the House Select Committee on Assassinations, Ted Gandolfo, told me he was murdered in Florida, and he said he got it from Representative Bob Green. And the newspapers down there have no record they put into the computer of a Gaetan Fonzi being killed in Florida, so I have to follow that up some more. Now, Wednesday, December 18th, regarding the killing of Paul Castellano and his driver, the San Jose Mercury had a large headline, Gangland Slaying Linked to Racketeering Trials. Right in the open, we have a trial, and he's been killed, but there still hasn't been a follow-up of who the people were who killed him. Just this week or this weekend, a foe of a parathyroid in Africa died in a car crash. Molly Blackburn, a head-on crash, along with an attorney, Brian Bishop. Two of the most prominent opponents of a parathyroid were killed. It was a head-on crash, and the newscaster said absolutely no connection to their political activity. Even her husband said there was no connection, and yet I saw a movie on Idi Amin. It's on videotape. I've seen it in the catalogs. You can get it if it's the same movie I saw in New York. And it showed how he trained kamikazes of his own troops and people. And, of course, Frank Turple was there working with Amin to commit murder or to die. The kamikaze do their own murder in the act of the cause that they were working for. And I don't believe for a moment that there aren't people in South Africa kamikaze trained or assigned for this role who didn't wipe out these two people at the time of this crash. The fact that a car met them head on and that the driver died doesn't at all mean that it was not political. And I don't believe that just to say it is not political by the husband or the authorities doesn't mean that they weren't killed. The realm of coincidence is way being tilted overboard with all the recent murders. Many of you read about the murder, all of you might have read about the murder of Ludmila, I can't pronounce it, Kondrateva, Kondrateva of Santa Monica, the 38-year-old Russian immigrant. She's only been in this country 5 years, the primary witness in a trial that the FBI would like to get out of, the first FBI man, caught with espionage. He was acquitted in the last trial. She's the primary witness. The trial was about to take place again. And her car fell over a cliff in Santa Monica. And for one reason or another, they thought that this was a murder and not just a coincidence, because her body was in the back of the car and the roof of the car was caved in and they didn't see how she could get to the back of the car. Her position was the one that indicated murder. Well, if that was indication of murder, then Grace Kelly ended up over a cliff in the back of a car. But that wasn't murder. That was just a bad fall. And no explanation how she could get in the back and another one couldn't. In this case, in Santa Monica, it would have to be murder because she was found in the back. With Grace Kelly, it wasn't. She was able to be in the back seat, even though she was driving in the front seat. The mechanics of ruling it out in one case and being sure of hanky-panky in the other case are interesting because the situations were similar, but they feel that this witness that was working, trying to prosecute Mr. Miller, has been killed. And remember the woman, Russian woman up in Canada, who went flying out the window just at the time that Mr. Yushchenko, the Russian spy, was saying that he'd been drugged and kidnapped by the CIA, and he was allowed to go back to the Soviet Union. And a friend of his in Canada that he knew that they tried to cook up a love affair with, that he said wasn't at all, was killed in Canada. And another witness to this whole story, or to the fabrications of these stories, was killed. So this woman in Santa Monica, California, was killed, one up in Canada involving Russian espionage, and a primary witness of the drug trials killed in New York, and a writer witness to the P2 and the Argentine military junta relationships and the Italian Masonic Lodge to South America. He's gone. He's killed. There are many of these every week. I'm just citing a few of them. I'll take a one-minute break and update a few more horrendous stories that are not separate and linked together in many ways, but are just flooding the news media and calling attention to very serious problems that are never straightened up or cleared up or taken to a court of law. As Jack Kimbrough said, a revolutionary act would be to bring any single one of these to a court of law and investigate it properly. But we'll continue that in about 1 minute.